This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
We have with us Robert Connolly, who is the writer and the director of the simply outstanding film Balibo, which opened last Thursday. Robert, thank you so much for taking the time to come in tonight.
Very happy to, Thomas. Mark, it's great to be here.
Welcome. Yeah, it's a thrill for us, actually. Now, for the listener that may not be familiar with this part of our history, what events actually led to inspiring the film Balibo?
Well, East Timor is only an hour from Darwin. That's the amazing thing.
Yeah,
you get in a plane, you land there, and you're walking inside the ruins of 400-year-old Portuguese forts. It's incredible. You know, I'm sure the tourist potential down the track will be really interesting. But in 1975, the Portuguese were pulling out after 400 years. The country had a little window of opportunity to become independent, and it was invaded by Indonesia, and the Australian, British and American governments turned a blind eye.
Which is just...
incredible, really.
Astounding. Why?
I know. It's a terrible tragedy because, as we know, it was like a killing field on our doorstep. You know, 183,000 Timorese died during Indonesian occupation. But our story is about five young Australian-based journalists that went up there to cover that war, and another journalist, Roger East, who's one of the lesser-known figures in our history. He was in his 50s, played by Anthony LaPaglia in the film, who went up there at the invitation of the young José Ramos Horta, who's the president of the country now, to investigate and to find out what happened. And so it's kind of it's a thriller, really. It's a political thriller as these guys try and unravel the mystery of what's going on there, set against this amazing bit of history on our doorstep.
Yeah, and not that long ago at all.
No, 34 years is nothing. Yeah. You know, same year the Vietnam War ended.
Yeah, and yet it's amazing that we've had to wait so long to hear the real story of what happened there.
I know. Someone said to me, you know, Gallipoli took 70 years, the film Gallipoli after Gallipoli. Breaking Morant took about 90 years after the war. Well, we're actually quick off the mark with 34 years. But, you know, if you think of the films that were made about the Vietnam War immediately after, I mean, one of my favourites, The Deer Hunter, made within 18 months of the end of the Vietnam War.
Yeah, very
We are
quickly.
A bit tardy.
And so with the Iraq films, I mean, The Three Kings came out very quickly after the first invasion, and now after the second invasion, there's been quite a few films. So, it's just been a project that's been on the cards for you for a long time, that you've been wanting to develop for a long time, or is it a fairly recent thing?
About 6 years. You know, I made my first film that I directed, The Bank, with Anthony LaPaglia and David Wenham. And Anthony and I wanted to do another film together, and he found Jill Joloff's excellent book, Cover Up, which is a non-fiction work. She was a journalist there in 75 and written this amazing work on it. And Anthony brought it to me and said, you know, do you think there's a film in this? And that was about 6 years ago. So, and 12 months ago, we were in East Timor filming, so it's been quite a journey.
Wow. Now, I've heard that some of the pre-production time was quite interesting because it was at a time when José Ramos Horta was shot, and you were trying to, you know, convince everybody that it'd be fine and safe to film in East Timor. How much convincing did Anthony LaPaglia need?
Anthony needed a little. You know, he'd been doing his show Without a Trace for 7 years, and he was living in L.A., so he was only getting, you know, all of the official line on what was happening. And both the American and Australian governments have a Travel 4 category warning about going to East Timor, which essentially says don't go. And so he's reading that, thinking, you know, this is crazy. But talking to Ramos Horta, you know, when we got there, the country is much safer than you might believe until you get there. And Ramos Horta, when he was here for the Melbourne Film Festival opening, he'd been reading about all the violence in the city here, and he jokingly said, I'm sick of these travel warnings for people coming to our country. I'm going to post one for Timorese coming to Melbourne.
When you could have recreated a lot of the scenes and the terrain in East Timor here in Australia, why was it so important for you to actually go there to film this movie?
Yeah, look, I think the film needed to be authentic. You know, it needed to take the audience to a country that they haven't seen before, you know, to go on an adventure into this new land that people know nothing about. And I just couldn't fake it here. You know, the country is an amazing country, and it casts its spell over you. It seduces you. It compels you to tell its story. And I wanted to take these young actors up there and throw them into the world that the Balibo 5 had gone into in 75 and see if they too would be as affected as those journalists were back then. And it kind of worked, I think.
Well, it comes through in the film. I mean, you can see that it has a different light
a different sound, a different ambience that you couldn't get anywhere else.
Yeah.
And that informed a lot of your filming style, didn't it? Especially the stuff depicting the original five.
That's right.
You made some very deliberate stylistic choices about how you were going to represent their storyline.
Yeah, we took cameras with old Ingenue lenses from the 70s, the same lenses the guys would have used. We shot on the same, standard 16, Super 16 film now. But we did everything we could to emulate how they filmed. And everyone kept going, oh, you can shoot on HD. You know, Michael Winterbottom films now, they're all on HD. But interestingly, in a very remote part of East Timor, filming on this salt plain in 40 degree temperatures, the old cameras, we had little liquid crystal monitors on them, mm-hmm. and they just kept melting.
Oh,
and
God, eventually, of course they would. Yeah.
And I thought, God, if we were shooting HD, I wouldn't have been able to do it. It wouldn't have been as robust as these old cameras were. But, you know, I think part of the magic of making the film was to travel in the steps of these men and to film it as they would have back then.
You've actually spoken before about a pivotal moment during the filming when you actually found that process of recreating the images that the Balibo 5 were creating and, I guess, history kind of, I don't know, intersected for you.
Yeah, it was in Balibo. It was one of the most profoundly moving experiences for me as a director. You know, to be in this town, Balibo, where these men were killed, and to wake up in the morning, it was dark, to walk up to this 400-year-old Portuguese fort and stand where we know the Balibo 5 stood 34 years ago, waiting for there to be enough light to film the Indonesian attack. And the actors had slept in the house that's known as the Australia House. It's the house that Greg Shackleton paints the flag on. They'd even slept in the same house the guys had slept in. And we all stood there, and Lieutenant Colonel Sabika, who back then was the commander who defended Balibo for Fretland, the Timorese army, turned up with all of his soldiers, and they played the Indonesians attacking. So we had this guy who 34 years before had defended it, badly, as some would say, and clearly as it was overrun. But he was there to help us tell the story. Mm. And I found it just kind of, you know, incredibly moving and significant for us all. It was a heavy responsibility to get this right.
Well, that must have been very difficult to... I mean, you're all professionals, obviously, but you must have been quite overcome with emotion.
Yeah.
This must have been quite a sort of amazing... transformative experience, especially for the five young actors you had up there with you. I mean, I can't imagine their lives would be the same.
No, I mean, those actors did an incredible job. I mean, they've come off different things. You know, Damon Gamma, who did a really interesting film, The Tracker, so he'd worked in that Indigenous story.
Yes.
But Guyton Grantley coming off playing Carl Williams, it's kind of, all of a sudden he's, he's able to play a good guy this time. But, what I loved about those five young guys, they took the responsibility seriously. They met the families of the men that they played who tragically lost their loved ones. They did their research. They learn about journalists back then. They learn about what men were like back then, a whole different era to them. Most of them weren't even born then.
Yeah.
And they took that journey with us, to East Timor. I know a couple of them, particularly after the scenes of their murder, were overwhelmingly emotional about it.
Right.
One of the most terrifying scenes in the film is when Greg Shackleton is filming one of some of his footage, and a bomb goes off unexpectedly. There's a little story about how you made that work.
Oh yeah, it was explosions. I'd never done explosions before. It's kind of fun.
Will you ever go back?
I can blow things up. Yeah, they have to be things blowing up in all my films from now. But this is a piece to camera that Greg Shackleton's doing, and quite close behind him, we've planted a bomb that's going to go off. And I rehearsed it with him, and I, in every rehearsal, I clicked my fingers where the bomb was going to go off. Clicked my fingers, and he got used to the rhythm of it. And then on the take, I set the bomb off 5 seconds earlier. He said he nearly wet his pants.
And that comes across.
Yeah, look, it's important to let actors kind of not have to act it. Do whatever you can. I mean, he had a huge explosion going off behind him, which was entertaining.
There's no way not to keep that real.
No, that's right.
Robert, would you mind hanging around? We'd love to keep talking to you.
Yeah, of course, love to.
We're going to play some music from the film now. This is one of the many pieces of music that Lisa Gerard composed for you. You're listening to Thomas and Mark. We're talking with the writer-director of Balibo, Robert Connolly, here on the Casting Couch. This is Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to the Casting Couch here on Joy 94.9, and we're joined in the studio by the writer and director behind Balibo, Mr. Robert Connolly. Robert, Jose Ramos Horta is depicted in this film. He's a 25-year-old self, and amazingly, he's gone on to now be the first president of independent East Timor. Oscar Isaacs plays him in the film, and he does a phenomenal job. But I believe that Jose Ramos Horta actually had his own suggestions as to who was to play him.
That's right. You know, my first trip to East Timor, I got invited to dinner with the president, Ramos Horta.
As you do.
And nice. It was fantastic. I was nervous. I was like, and I've also got the script with me with him depicted as a 25-year-old.
Yeah.
And I thought, what's he going to be worried about? And his first thing was, is George Clooney available?
Because he's really renowned, isn't he, for his sort of humour.
He's very cheeky and very charismatic. And then the second trip I arrived in East Timor with the designer, Bob Cousins, and the front page of the Timorese newspaper was announcing that Antonio Banderas was arriving to play the role. And I'm sure Horta kind of leaked that in some tricky... And so he finally met Oscar Isaac and he looked him up and down. And Oscar, you can imagine, he's playing this guy, who's so nervous.
Of course.
And Horta said, I showed one of your films to two of my girlfriends and asked them if you were good looking enough to play me. They said no.
Oh, I love it.
But he was amazingly supportive, and without him and without his help, we couldn't have made the film. You know, he opened the doors to the country and I guess knew that our approach to the film was also to tell the story of East Timor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really is a dilemma. I think you mentioned in your review, the whole thing of five Australian-based guys versus the 183,000, national interest in how our media covers things. You know, it's all complex, this stuff, and the film deals with a lot of that.
Now, tell us a bit about the scene that really confronts that issue, which is the scene at the swimming pool.
Yeah.
Because that wasn't completely scripted, was it?
No. We improvised that around a structure. I knew the guts of what I wanted to say there. I knew the political point of view we were trying to explore,
mm-hmm.
which was essentially this argument about,
Yeah, just to put it into context, it's the argument about why do we care about five wide guys.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they really ran with it, mm-hmm. and it ends in a physical fight between the two of them. And they'd made the decision that unless their dynamic fight between them verbally got to a point where they'd want to attack each other, they weren't going to. And one of the early takes ended with the two of them in hysterics. And I thought, we're not going to get anywhere here. But of course, it ended with a very passionate declaration from both of them about their beliefs and then that huge fight in the pool. But interestingly, it's a question for Australians and, it's a slightly uncomfortable one for us, but would we have cared as much about East Timor and helped it become independent in 99 if it wasn't for the fact that these young, as Horta says in the film, white Australian guys were killed, And I think national interest in our own, region is something that drives a lot of those decisions. And, the Timorese view the Balibo Five as their own because they know that those guys, the death of those guys, if anything good can come from it, it helped them become independent.
Mm. We were saying before off air that even though so many years have passed since these events, this movie is still touching on raw nerves and it's still quite controversial.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about that and I guess, where we are with the whole politics.
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, I don't know if you guys read The Australian on the weekend, but the Australian reviewer, halfway through his review, declared that he used to work for Gough Whitlam and got stuck into me for being too hard on poor Gough. you're kind of stirring up things for people that need to be confronted. You know, 34 years, I mean, come on. If we can't look at this as a historic event and scrutinise it and be tough about it and rigorous about it and look at what happened, finally acknowledging that, how do we come to grips with, our national identity? I think cinema can have a great power in doing that. For me, The Killing Fields about Cambodia and the Khmer Rouge is like such a great example of cinema putting something on the record that needed to be put on the record.
And Welcome to Sarajevo is another film like that.
Wonderful,
which I can see was a big influence for you.
Oh, huge, and all of Winterbottom's films in their stylistic kind of boldness too, It was
just getting back to the Gough Whitlam thing, do you think that it would have made any difference as to what political party were in power at the time or what Prime Minister was around?
No. They were both hopeless. So, you know, Whitlam government was in power. The Balibo Five were killed on October 16th. Mm-hmm. The dismissal happened. Fraser came in. Indonesia invaded on December the 7th with the Fraser government. So, you know, really, on this matter, and as we've seen historically, you know, and over the last 34 years, there's not really much of a point of difference between the parties on East Timor. And certainly, you know, back then, I don't think it would have mattered one iota.
No, I ask that because I suspect it does hit a raw nerve when Gough gets criticised because he's meant to be one of, the good politicians.
Yeah, I can't win. People say it was too soft on him. People say it was too hard on him. You know,
but I think the point was it was irrelevant, really, who was in power. Was Australia's position.
Yeah, and for me in the film, you know, it's kind of not that real. You know, I mean, I'm critical of the government and Whitlam, of course, as you need to be. But for me, this is a story about East Timor. This is about the Timorese people. You know, when I went there, and there's an archive with 8,000 statements made by the Timorese after 99, these people that came forward to tell the story of what happened to their country, you know, I found it inspiring, you know. And this is, you know, often in a culture where it's very hard, particularly for women, to come forward and talk in detail about being imprisoned and tortured and raped and, you know, incredible tragedy that many of the Timorese suffered.
I love that you incorporated that in Living Memory archive, the stories into the story.
Yeah. Well, that was the great discovery. You know, Juliana, character in the film played by Bea Viegas, I mean, you know, amazing kind of, you know, to find someone who's Timorese who hasn't acted before to kind of narrate the film, really.
I was stunned when I found out she hadn't acted before.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah. Amazing performance, you know.
What an amazing coincidence, I guess, for this film to actually be premiering in Australia at the time when East Timor is celebrating its 10th anniversary of independence, to have José Ramos Horta out here, to have East Timorese people out here, you know, and the families of the Balibo Five. I mean, for you as a filmmaker, you know, telling this amazing story, that must just be a pivotal moment for you.
Yeah, incredible. I mean, you know, this month, 10-year anniversary of independence, we've dubbed the entire film into Tetun, the Timorese language, and we're taking it up at the invitation of the president to screen the film on the 28th of August, a big outdoor screening for the Timorese in their own language. I mean, to be part of the celebration of that country. I mean, how did it happen? How did East Timor, in the face of all the powers of the world wanting it to remain part of Indonesia, find its independence? It's a small miracle, and it's a great celebration. And here in Melbourne too, because the biggest Timorese population out of Dili is here in Melbourne.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
I think there's a lot more we can talk about the film's reception. If you wouldn't mind sticking around again, we're going to play a bit the soundtrack. This is some more music by the great Lisa Gerrard, formerly from Dead Can't Dance. Or is it Dead Can Dance? Dead Can Dance.
Yeah, that's right.
You're listening to Thomas and Mark on the Casting Couch on Joy 94.9, and we're speaking to a very special guest, Robert Connolly, the writer and director of Balibo. This is the Casting Couch with Thomas and Mark, and we're chatting to the writer and director of Balibo, Robert Connolly. Now, just before those messages, Robert, we listened to some more of the music by Lisa Gerrard. It's a remarkable collaboration. It's one that fascinates me between composer and the director.
Yeah.
How was it working with Lisa? And you must be absolutely thrilled to have had her on board.
Oh, yeah, it was fantastic. I showed her a rough edit of the film. She lives here in Victoria, in regional Victoria, although she's known for, you know, The Insider and Gladiator and those bigger films. But, you know, I really loved the music she did on Whale Rider as well.
Yes,
you know, I think emotionally somehow she taps into something that that moves you. I mean, her whole philosophy is that the music in a film is the soul of the film, you know, that somehow it shouldn't just be a narrative device to help tell the story. It has to kind of lead you emotionally somewhere. And I think, you know, it's a large part of how this film works in terms of emotionally affecting people. You know, her wonderful score and her vocal line, you know, that she's famous for.
Well, she has got a beautiful voice and she knows how to use it.
Yeah, that's right. I loved working with her.
Just whilst we're on the sound, I actually really liked the sound design for this film as well, because it just added that extra element of East Timor into the film. So we should actually mention the sound designers, Sam Petty and Emma Bortignon.
Bortignon.
Thank you.
Yeah, they're wonderful. They've done a great job. And yeah. Sam's done all of my films, and Emma was a new member of the team, but mm-hmm. she did the film Noise, which she won an AFI yeah. award for.
So sensational
I had
film.
The dream team. The
you really did. You
did, jeez, yeah.
And who was the cinematographer? That was somebody...
Yeah, Tristan Milani. He yes. shot all my films, Going Back to the Boys that I produced. Mm-hmm. He did The Bank and $3. And but this was a... You know, he's a very good friend. And so we really had to go and work this one hard. You know, very remote places, small crew. None of the trappings of your usual film. No grips and gaffers and trucks. And, you know, it was really, you know, kind of... a bold approach that suited the way we were trying to deal with this story.
Now, you've been showing this film to the to the family members of the Balibo Five. What's that experience been like? I imagine amazingly humbling and quite moving for all involved.
And you must be so incredibly nervous when you screen it to them.
You have no idea how nervous I was. I mean, Shirley Shackleton, Greg Shackleton's wife, who's been like such an active player in the independence movement for East Timor. And I showed her, I promised all the families access to what we were doing. So they met the actors and they could always call me and talk about it if they were anxious. But then to show them, and I promised that I'd screen it as soon as it was finished. So the day after I got the first print, I had a screening for Shirley at the Nova here in Carlton. And I was terrified at what she would think. And it was very moving for me that she enjoyed the film, you know, and as with the other families. Because you can't imagine, what must it be like to watch a film that deals with the murder of someone that you loved?
Mm.
And the faith that you have to, you know, give the filmmaker, you know, to allow them... to do that. No, it was a fantastic experience. Showing it to those families was, you know, I mean, you know, in the same way that it was taking the film to East Timor and showing it to the Timorese and to Ramos Horta, which I did at the same time.
Yeah.
That was probably more nerve-wracking.
Yeah, well, what was his response?
Well, like the first screening we had in Dili was in a, you know, DVD projector in a hall, about 100 of his friends, and they treated it like a home movie. Whenever the character of Horta did anything heroic, everyone cheered. You know, there's a scene where he's being chased by a helicopter and he was like, I would have run faster, Robert. But then at the Melbourne Film Festival opening night, I sat with him and he was profoundly moved by it. And he talked in the speech afterwards, just off the cuff, about post-World War II atrocities and how, in his view, the tragedy of East Timor is a drop in the ocean of a bigger tragedy, and that his hope that the film would show a compassionate view of things that might soften the way people treat each other in these situations. Mm. I mean, that's high expectation. But, you know, for me to hear someone talk about my film like that was terrific.
Yeah. Now, I believe that we've got a special listener listening in today, because it turns out your wife, Jane, is actually a Joy member.
She is indeed. She's a member. She cast the film. She's a casting director of all of my films.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been a long-standing member. In fact, I think she donated recently to the show via your program.
Oh, that's
so she's
phenomenal.
A fan of the two of you. Well, she listens to your show regularly.
A big hello and thank you to Jane.
Yes.
And if you're ever
thank you, Jane.
Casting for a film that needs a couple of community radio announcers...
Actually, she
we
cast,
have faces for radio.
She cast the film Are You Without Sex? And there's all of that stuff in the radio station.
Oh, there is too,
yes. With Matt Day's character.
Oh, we've missed our chance.
You've missed your chance. Sorry.
Now, tell us a little bit about the book that was the source material.
Yeah, Jill Joloff's excellent book cover up.
Because that has been... Well, has it been ignored or just something that people didn't want to know about or...
Yeah.
It's been a long time coming for her to get the vindication that she's deserved.
Yeah, it's a life devoted to pursuing the truth of this. And her book's been republished as Balibo. It's in the shops now.
Mm-hmm.
And she's updated it. And she's done a large section on Roger Rees, the character Anthony plays, based on a lot of extra material that came forward.
Mm-hmm.
And she worked very hard on the 2007 coronial inquiry into the death of the Balibo Five in New South Wales. The coroner made special mention of her work in bringing out Timorese witnesses to that inquest. And, you know, she's an extraordinary person. Probably known more now for her work with the Living Memory Project, which is interviewing Timorese women that were imprisoned and getting that on the record while she can.
Did you work one-on-one with her at all? Did you work directly together on the film?
Yeah, well, she was invaluable. You know, she was a journalist in East Timor in 75.
Mm.
So, you know, she met the Balibo Five. She knew Roger East. I mean, she was a great asset. You know, as was Tony Minnati, the character in the film, who was the ABC guy there. The two of them, you know, being journalists on the ground there. Excellent help.
Mm-hmm. Well, Robert, thank you so much for coming in today.
Yes, thank you very, very
much. Very happy to. It was great to talk to you both.
We've enjoyed this immensely. Bellabo is now screening. It tells the tale, finally, of, I think, one of Australia's most shameful times in our history. A story that is, yeah, well worth hearing. And you must see this film.
You know, we should say, the Australian box office, it's a funny and it's a fickle thing. Yeah. And a lot of the survival of any Australian film depends on the opening weekend.
That's
box
right.
office. So if you haven't seen it yet,
tomorrow
you've got this evening. I'm sure there's still screenings this evening. You've got tomorrow. For heaven's sake, support this film. If you don't, you're betraying the Australian film industry, and I'm saying that semi-seriously.
And the thing is, this isn't just the best Australian film I've seen this year. Mm. This would have to be, you know, the best film, full stop, I have seen this year. Yeah. So, you know,
I mean, it's a wildly entertaining film. That's the other thing we should stress. This is not a lecture. This is entertainment and it's cinema at its best.
Even if you're not familiar with the history, this is an engaging film.
Mm. All right, we're making Robert blush. We're going to say thank you very much.
Thank you both.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.